Blog Talk Radio.
Radio, and we're really excited to have Angie with us today. I'm Tara Rez. I'm sitting in for Angie while she's experiencing wild and extraordinary things in the UK. And today I'm here with Rick Hunt, the normal co-host. So, hi, Rick. How are you?
Hi, Tara. I'm not sure how normal I am, but good morning.
You're so not normal. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
What we're going to do, we're going to, Angie has a little bit of time she can spend with us all today. So I'm going to pass over the control to our queen, Angie, and she's going to talk with you, Rick, and Heather.
Excellent.
Odom. You're
wonderful.
Online already. We're looking forward to talking to you. But let's just catch up with Angie and see what she's done.
Welcome, Heather.
Hey, everyone. How are you all? How are you, Rick, my friend?
I'm much better hearing your voice.
You are so wonderful. I've just got such a joy, such a buzz, what I called up and Carol had answered the phone, it was like, oh, yes, I need to talk to a friend. And
well, you have
told
them.
Me he's been up the mountain. Pardon?
I say you have friends.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, the Celebrity Big Brother was quite something. I think I would have been fine. I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't have, but I felt like I was okay. And then they came to me about a week into it, 6 days into it, on the following Monday. I went in on a Tuesday night, and the following Monday they came and told me that David had died. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone felt the same. No one knew what to say or do, did we?
Right. Right, many people.
So, yeah, it just seemed to take the bottom out of, you know, all those years of having him in the background and his take on things. Anyway, first it was surreal, then it was devastating. Then I felt sick. Then I got sick. They asked me how I processed my grief. I think I processed my grief by becoming ill. I don't think I could handle it at all. And I just lay in bed sick as a parrot. That's all I can say. And then I decided that I really couldn't tolerate it in there any longer. And I decided I better come on out. So that's my story. And I love you all. I sure did miss you. Something terrible, not being able to get on the internet, not being able to call on the phone or to take a piece of paper or do a drawing like our maestro Rick Hunt does. I couldn't do Jack. It was just really a pain. But that's enough about me. I'm fine now. I'm out, and I'm really looking forward to seeing Michael and the cats and coming home. And Tara's been the best. She's just Tara Rose of the Jewel, ladies and gentlemen. My girl, there she is, taking a bow. Yes, Rick.
I just want to say one thing, Angie, that I know that many people, many of your friends felt helpless, myself included. I know so many people wanted to swoop in and comfort you. I certainly did. I was heartbroken.
Me too. It was a very...
I just wanted to give you a big hug and tell you that everything's going to be okay.
Thank you so much. I would have loved one look at your red sombrero and I'd have felt better.
Well, many people approached me. Many people got in contact with me and wanted me to give you their love and fondest regards. And I spent, the day of the news, I was up at 4 in the morning, and from 4 in the morning till 10:30 at night, all I did was field phone calls, emails, IMs, Facebook from hundreds of people.
Oh, wow.
And,
thank you.
And also cleaned out a little bit of the trolls, too.
Good idea. Always a good idea.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I just
so
want
sorry.
You to know we were all looking out for you.
Thank you so much. I am so very grateful, and I feel honored to have all of you in my life because the messages have been so kind and so wonderful. I really appreciate it. I'm going to pass you back to Tara.
Okay.
She's chewing. No, I guess I'm not. She's having a cheery sarnie for lunch. What can I say? Such glamorous lives. There she is, chewing away. Bless her heart. I didn't mean to drop you in it, Tara. What I meant was, now let's see. I'll be back home soon, probably another week or so, and I'll be back in the States. I can't wait to see everyone. It's been great being back on Facebook and just having a chance to say hi to folks. How do I feel? I feel I thought I would die first. I didn't think David would die first. I think that's why I can't process it. It never occurred to me that I would be here when he wasn't. And I feel for my son, and I'm so sorry for Iman and their daughter, who's who I'm sure are having their own grief and suffering to work through. So I hope all their family and friends take comfort in our condolences and our best wishes for this very hard time that they're going through. But as for all of us, the fans of David Bowie, those of us who worked with him and tried to help make what he said and what he wrote relevant to folks who needed help, all I can say is I'm here. I'll always be here for everyone. And thank you. Thank you for your interest. Thank you for your pleasure you've given me, and I'm sure David, because David appreciated the fans more than some entertainers, and he was respectful of the fans. So I send you much love, and it's not my place to speak for him, but I'm just saying it on my behalf. But be aware that he was cognizant of the fact that folks can become interested in someone else and not pay attention. And you guys always paid attention and always were interested in what he was doing, and that's just so brilliant. So I'll stop waffling. And here's the lovely Tara Rez. I know you've got great guests lined up. Everything's going to be fabu. Thank you so much, and I will speak to you soon, everybody.
Thank you, Angie. It's really exciting.
Thank you.
To hear your voice. And, yeah, it's obviously a crazy time, isn't it, Rick?
No.
We're all getting over it. So it was really special that Angie could join us. She has got a shoot off to do more press and TV. So is it a good time to introduce our first wonderful guest?
Absolutely.
Heather O, are you there?
Yes, Miss Tara Rez, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
I can also.
Fantastic.
Heather, welcome.
Thank you for inviting me.
So, yeah, today's theme, because we've got such creative, forward-thinking minds on the show, and Rick, obviously you're one of those, the theme was kind of like, how can we create a better world for everyone? And from what I know of Heather is that she's a very passionate woman who has committed a large part of her life in simply creating that for that to happen. Did you get time to check out Venus Project, Rick?
A little bit, yes, I did. I'm looking forward to hearing about it from Heather, who...
Yes.
Who was there, or is still there? It is still going on.
The Venus Project. Oh yes, very much so. They're actually the site is down at the moment. They're making it much better, bring it up to date more, so that people can have a better experience on the site. So it's still down. I checked about 10 minutes ago. So what? Do you want to ask me questions, or what do you want me
to do? Yeah, I'd be interested to hear from you, Heather, how you got involved with the Venus Project, and can you tell our listening audience a little bit about what it is? I'd like to hear that.
I can't. Okay, so the Venus Project is an organization that proposes a feasible plan of action for social change, one that works towards a peaceful and sustainable global civilization. That's what it is. And,
beautiful.
That's the project director of the Venus Project is going to be 100 years old this year on the 13th of March.
Wow.
And he's worked all his life since he was a teenager. He lived through the first Great Depression, because we're probably on the second Great Depression right now. He lived through that as a teenager, and he couldn't understand why, you know, people were starving in the streets when those shop windows were full of luxury goods, and you know, so he made a promise to himself that he was going to spend the rest of his life making sure that that situation, or find a solution so that that situation would never happen again. And so he created the Venus Project, not back then, but, you know, in years to come. I'm not quite sure how long the Venus Project has been the Venus Project, but for a very long time. And he's an industrial designer, if you like, a futurist. Some say he's like the living, you know, like a living Leonardo da Vinci or Buckminster Fuller. He designed circular, beautiful circular futuristic cities that you kind of design from underneath the ground up so that everything is recycled. Cities can be different sizes in you know, circular sizes for smaller and bigger cities. And the idea is that they are joined up by one very fast rail connection, you know, maglev train kind of idea, and one motorway with electric cars or whatever we have at that time. And the rest of the planet can go back to nature in between each city.
Mm. What a beautiful idea. And
yeah, and obviously, very much so. And each city would be self-sustainable. It would grow all of its own food. So there'd be no problems of distribution, et cetera, et cetera. And so really, he not only did he design that, that's just kind of a side thing, is his cities, because, you know, obviously the way he designs them will change with new designers that come up, but the main thing that he's designed is a new social system called a global resource-based economy. And to better understand the meaning of a resource-based economy, if you consider, if we were to take all the money in the world, it just got destroyed, got wiped out in one go, as long as we still had topsoil, factories, and all the other resources were left intact, we could build anything we chose to.
Mm-hmm.
We could fulfill any human need, because it's not money that people need. It's rather it's the free access to the necessities of life. And so, really, a resource-based economy, money would be irrelevant. All that would be required are the resources and the manufacturing and the distribution of the products.
If we could just get to that place.
Yeah. And so how I got involved with the Venus Project, at the time, it was back in 2009, and I was working full-time in the operating theatre as a theatre sister at the time, so I'm kind of working about 60 hours a week sometimes. And I used to sit there or stand there while I was operating. I'd think, you know, really, I think it was at that time when the Gulf around that time we had that incident with the Gulf, the oil in the Gulf and stuff. And, well, I'd already got involved with the Venus Project before then. But, you know, I kind of started thinking, well, the patient on the table, really, and the team of us standing around and looking after the patient is a bit like the whole world. You could, you know, like the patient is the planet, and the team of people looking after that patient is like, if we all got on and worked as a team, all the countries without, you know, any borders, we could all work and take good care of our planet and our species. And I don't know, I stumbled across the Venus Project, a YouTube video one day, and came across Jacques Fresco, and I was just, you know, I couldn't believe what I was hearing, and I just said to myself, I have to speak to this gentleman.
Wow.
And with that, I found out that the Zeitgeist movement had just started up, and the Zeitgeist Addendum film had come out. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Maybe tell us a little bit about it for our viewers.
Okay.
We don't really know Zeitgeist.
The Zeitgeist movement actually was founded as the activist arm for the Venus Project. the Zeitgeist film, the first one, was made. But it was just pointing out all the problems. And that's when Jack and Roxanne Meadows, Jack Fresco's assistant, or companion, if you like, got in touch with Peter, who created the first Zeitgeist film, and said, you know, you're pointing out all the problems, but we actually have the solutions. And with that, he went to visit them down in Venus in Florida. That's why it's called the Venus Project, because it's actually in Venus in Florida. Hmm. And he made the film, The Zeitgeist Addendum, which is, in that film, Jack Fresco is then introduced to the world in The Zeitgeist Addendum. And he introduces his cities and the resource-based economy as a solution to all of the problems that we currently have on the planet. And so I kind of found out where there was a meeting up of the Zeitgeist movement that had just recently formed, went along, and ended up helping. Jack Fresco was giving a lecture in Copenhagen in 2009, in the September, I think it was, August, September time. And the people in London offered to put on a lecture for him over in England, in London. And so I helped. We were a team of people that helped organize that. And we did two back-to-back lectures in London, which were sold out and a great success.
Wow.
And when they went back, they stayed for the whole week, and we organized radio shows, etc., and a TV show and stuff while they were here. And when they went back, Roxanne asked if I could maybe organize another lecture. They had some interest from Switzerland and in Dubai, I think it was. And with that, I kind of thought, well, that, you know, why not have a world lecture tour?
Mm-hmm.
And so I suggested that to them, and Jack said, well, hey, you know, what else am I going to do? You know, that's a great idea. So we went on, I created for them a lecture tour. We did 21 countries and 29 lectures in a period of 7 months.
Wow.
They went to Bogota, I mean. And then from Bogota, they went on to New Zealand, where they did two lectures. They did four in Australia.
Huh.
They did one in Japan. They went to India. They went to most of the countries in Europe, into London, obviously, Greece, Slovenia, all these countries. And it was a great success, you know. I just wanted the whole world to hear what I'd heard. You know, I couldn't believe what I... It was just so...
It
made so much sense to me, really. And
it's
so
nice to know as well that... sorry, Heather. I just cut in there.
Okay.
It's nice to know as well that there's people out there in the world that really do care about solving some obviously terrible global problems. And some people don't... They go as far to commit their whole life to finding ways to find answers to how to solve problems for the whole globe as opposed to one section of it. Did you find that... how long were you with Jack Fresco and Venus Project? Was it about 6 years?
Oh, no. No. I actually was like the project manager for creating the world... lecture tour, really. So it was from the August September time in 2009 till about July 2010, when, you know, everything we had already been organized for the lecture tour. Yeah. I love it still. I still see that as the future for everybody, and working towards creating that. The one thing I would like to say is, you know, when he gave his lecture, he used to say every time, it's up to you guys in the audience to make this, you know, if you want this as your future, you have to make this happen. He couldn't see how we could create, you know, get from there, from where we are today, to where he sees us being.
without, you know, the whole system crashing and bloodshed and all the rest of that. And I really didn't want that to be the way of us getting there. I wanted it to be a peaceful, collaborative, cooperative way that we would get there. And while I was working for the Venus Project, that was when I met Dr. Jack King, who got in touch with the Venus Project at the time, because he wanted to help them. And that's where I met Dr. Jack King. So I've known
I think
Dr.
we actually
Jack
have
King
Dr. Jack King on the line.
Well, that's
wonderful.
Do we have Dr. Jack King? Dr. Jack, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Ah, yes.
Hear you.
Welcome.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Dr. Jack. Thank you. So, Heather, did you feel that a global resource economy, although the idea was there, did you feel that it could actually work? Did you feel that it was a viable solution to the problem?
I know that it will work. I don't feel that it will work. I mean, it seems obvious to me that it's the only solution, and that, you know, that's where we will end up being in a global resource-based economy, the sooner rather than better, you know, rather than later, as far as I'm concerned. But it's getting there, and the lovely Dr. Jack King, I call him the man with the plan, because he has a plan, a beautiful plan, to get us all there. So that's why for the last nearly 6 years, I've done all that I could, sometimes not so well, but to my best, I've done my best to support his plan, and I'll let Jack take over, if that's all right with you.
Yes, Jack.
Complete.
Dr. Jack, could you introduce yourself?
Sure, I'd love to. First of all, I want to thank you for putting this show together. Obviously, it's a thing that is related by the look of the link to Angie Bowie, and I'd like to know a little bit more about, you know, where Angie comes in and when we'll next be able to listen and speak with her. Is there any comment you want to make on that before I introduce myself, Tara?
Angie's actually getting ready to go and do a TV performance. She was due to be on this show, which is why we made it 90 minutes. However, all our time has been taken up the last few days by press, and we're in a secret location and in a 5-star-plus hotel who've had major internet problems today. So.
Yeah.
It's been a challenge, but like Angie said, the show must go on. So here we are. Angie did come and say hello at the beginning of the show. So unfortunately, she won't be with us the rest of the show. But another time, Dr. Jack, I will have to arrange for you to speak to her, because she's delighted and would love to have this conversation with us all. But in her absence, me and Rick are also very fascinated, and we are, you know, we have big hearts for the world and want to be active in our passions as opposed to a couch potato. And like Heather said, you are a man with a plan. So if you want to take over the mic and tell us all about you and your fascinations,
sure.
That would be wonderful.
Sure. So I'll keep it very focused and brief. My background is systems integration and optimization and simplification. And ultimately everything, including your mind and body, your spirit and soul, your heart, and all the other elements that goes into being a human being, are systems. And each system is nested inside of bigger systems and is made up of smaller systems nested inside of it. So, because I had the privilege of an education, a formal education, and a self-education with my father and others, that allowed me to understand the principles, the first principles of all systems, which is basically that every system has input, a process that it puts what input through, and then an output. So that's the nature of systems. They have an input, a process, an output. And the input of one system is the output of another, and the output of one system is the input of another. So once you start to really look at life and look at business and look at the past, present, and future from the context, from the point of view of systems and systems architecture and what I call intelligent, optimized design, the ideas of Jacques Fresco, which I first came across with my father decades ago, and then I watched him sort of grow older and more effective in one way, in the sense that he was telling his story in a way where more people were listening and more people were watching and more people were getting involved and reading and writing on the web and blogs and those other ways of communicating. But to get the thing done, like to actually live in cities of that nature in the future, occurred to me like it was sort of being stalled or stopped or slowed down by something. And I wanted to get to see if I could contribute in a way that would allow him to complete what he'd started while he was still alive. Now, as Heather quite rightly mentioned, he is now nearly 100 years old, and on his 100th birthday, there will be a huge celebration, which I've had a little bit to do with, to support the foundation of the Venus Project and to support Jacques and Roxanne in releasing their new movie and releasing some other media and material that will hopefully, in their point of view, get viral and be shared globally in a way that actually causes us to take action. But the thing I want to speak to in the sort of by way of introduction to myself is often, not always, but almost always, the people with the big ideas like Jacques Fresco, like Einstein, like Leonardo da Vinci, like Angie Bowie and David Bowie, these people are ahead of their time. And, you know, while the rest of one of you's got an open mic, just, you know, I can hear rustling. I don't know who that is, but just be conscious of it. The people who are ahead of their time are often, almost always, misunderstood or not understood. And I'd rather be not understood than misunderstood. But Mr. Fuller taught me why and how to be clear about that. So I want to communicate with you today in the time we do have in a way that you can fully understand and not possibly misunderstand both my intent and my strategy and structure for fulfillment. So I can see a way that we as a species can move elegantly and efficiently, that means rapidly and simply, towards a bright shared vision of the future through a high frequency of interaction amongst the people who are committed to collaborating to co-create that future. But that requires those people making themselves known to each other. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
Rick, Tara.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. And
it
that's
does.
What... So go on. I heard a woman's
no,
voice.
Just, I was agreeing with you. I was just agreeing with you that it does make sense. And I was thinking, how do you co-create that future together?
Well, that's what I want to share with you today, because I think it's time for that. Now, if I'd have been asked this question a decade ago or two, we weren't ready for all sorts of reasons, which I could get into the depth of, but it'd be boring for you. It doesn't really make much difference. Let's make a difference by getting clear on what does make a difference and taking those actions now. So the first thing to understand is that there's an old saying, psycho the mind, runs somo the body, psychosomatic. Have you heard that before, Rick?
Actually, no.
Okay. So psychosomatic means psycho the mind, somo the body, psychosomatic. And psychosomatic implies that the mind runs the body.
Right.
Well, as a system, it turns out it looks like it's true. The question is, what runs the mind? And the mind isn't run by thought. It isn't even run by feelings, which is shocking to those of you that are heart-centered. It turns out, scientifically, that the mind is run by questions. It's constantly exploring, inquiring, and discovering into what's possible for itself to gather evidence for its current point of view. And the problem is that more often than not, the point of view is either inaccurate or incomplete. And so it's gathering evidence. Like an example would be you buy a new Mini Clubman and you start driving one. Suddenly you see all the Mini Clubmans on the streets. It's not they weren't there before. It's just that you're now focused on gathering evidence to what you see when you look out your door and window and when you're driving, okay? So the mind, unfortunately, is not necessarily our best friend when it comes to producing breakthrough results, breakthrough shifts in consciousness and creativity. Are you still there? You can hear me okay?
Yep.
Just checking my computer, this little switch on its screen. I'm just checking you can hear me. So let me just get into what I developed and why it's relevant to this conversation. So communication is a system. Now, that sounds obvious from one point of view, but not so obvious from another. So there's both verbal communication, which we're doing right now on an audio conference call into a blog radio that can be listened and replayed ad infinitum if the files aren't lost and people still have access and know how to get to it. So we're actually recording something today for the rest of humankind's history if it doesn't get lost or locked up or, you know, the index is missing. You understand?
Right.
So we're speaking today just to, you know, Tara, Rick, and Heather and Jack. We're actually speaking to the whole of the future of humankind that chooses this point of focus in terms of listening this or reading this transcribed if somebody does that. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we often forget that we're speaking to the entire cosmos in the non-physical sense. The cosmos is constantly listening, and it has a system to it that is self-organizing, and what's really interesting is it is self-policing in the sense that the consciousness that creates a problem is a different consciousness than the consciousness that creates the solution. It's literally, there's like a boundary to it. Now, I'm going to get into some heavy stuff if I'm allowed to. Is that okay with both of you, Rick and
Absolutely.
Tara?
Absolutely.
Coming in there, Rick,
because
it's all making sense to you.
I'm fascinated, and I'm enjoying what Dr. King is saying.
Good.
Fantastic.
All right, then let me know
Thank
if you.
You
want to ask a question. Just stop me in the middle, and just don't feel feel free to interrupt or interject, whichever feels appropriate. So what I'm building here is a simple case for how do you create a plan. I know Heather calls me the man with the plan. There are millions of other people who feel that way too, but I'm just a guy, a two-year-old in a big body that's nearly 55 years old. I was actually in hospital for a procedure on my throat yesterday, which is unfortunately the first time in 7 years that it went a little bit wrong. So
wow.
I speak through a voice that's a little challenged, but I'm speaking because I felt intuitively and otherwise that it was the right thing for me to do today with my energy, my time, my attention. And so here I am, thanks to Tara's invitation and Heather's support of the confirmation of the context of the conversation. I want to contribute as much as I can while I can, as we all do at some level. And so, as I said, there are two forms of communication, verbal and nonverbal, for want of a better way of distinguishing it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there are many ways to communicate verbally in many languages. As you know, there's, you know, Spanish, Chinese, Russian, English, French, Italian, Greek, etc. So there's the languages themselves. But there's also computer and technology systems languages, which you may not be able to read and write, speak and listen. But those languages are connecting us through the internet, through other technologies like Apple's iPhone and iPad and all the ecosystems that are being created by Skype and the other applications that let you literally see and be seen, hear and be heard, text and be texted, translate, be translated, and now transact and be transacted with, person-to-person direct connect with no real need for a bank, business, or government between you and the other person. Does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not that there aren't banks, businesses, and governments listening in and being between you and the other party, but they don't necessarily need to be. I don't want to get too political with you because I'm not really a political person. But I want you to be clear.
We don't do politics on this show.
Oh, about that. But either way, whether you do or you don't, it can easily be interpreted as a political statement. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not
true.
For or against governments, banks, and businesses. I'm not for them. I'm not against them. I'm just aware that the things that Dr. Richard Buckminster Fuller taught me directly and millions of other people are very relevant today. Now, on the, you know, it's Thursday, the 21st of January. It's the first month of the year 2016. We made it past 2012 against some people's perspective of what's possible and what's probable, almost certain to happen then. So we're alive. We're on a biosphere that's alive, has a mind, has a heart, has a spirit, has a soul, has blood. We call it the oceans, you know. So Mother Earth has a life of her own, and she's allowing us to continue to reside on her surface. And we're just 64 miles away from dropping off into space. That's how thick the atmosphere is. It's not very far when you think about 64 miles across the surface. That's, you know, easy to travel nowadays with a bicycle or a car or some other vehicle. But going vertically out from the center of the Earth out to the atmosphere into space, that 64 miles takes specialized knowledge and specialized skills and specialized equipment. It takes specialization to be able to make that journey. The average person doesn't know why to do that and how to do that yet. Now, I'm not saying that will be the case 100 or 1,000 years from now, but today, the average person knows it's possible, but doesn't know why and how to do that. Clear?
Great.
Now, what's interesting is the moment about 40-some years ago, we went out there and we took a photograph of the Earth from out there looking in instead of in here looking out. And the moment that image was circulated, a paradigm shift occurred, an actual measurable, weighable, countable, scientifically provable shift happened, because we'd never seen the Earth as one spinning ball, as an actual photo, as an actual image of the actual way it looks from out there looking in. Are you with me? It hadn't been.
That's right.
It had not been our experience as a species. We hadn't ever had that experience, individually or collectively. But that image from space demonstrated, number one, that it looks either spherical or ovoid or round. Doesn't look like it's flat and square. Doesn't look like it has edges. Secondly, since then, you know, we've done audiovisual stuff from satellites in space that the general public has seen. And so we're pretty clear the world isn't flat. Those of us that are exposed to that information, that energy, that experience. The challenge is that on the planet we have 7.5 billion people, if you count the children in utero that are alive right now but not out of the mother yet, and you count the people who are out already and haven't yet dropped the body or left the physical. So you've got about 7.5 billion living organisms called human on the biosphere that, to different levels of understanding and different levels of education, different levels of experience, have a sense that we're living on a blue and green spinning ball that's traveling millions of miles per hour through the cosmos, and it's spinning in a spiral, actually, and it's like a tail feather on the sun. It's sort of trying to keep up with our sun, which is pulling it through the cosmos. And most people don't understand that and know that. In fact, there are over 1.5 billion people on the planet today who still live in the communication and context of the Earth is flat and there's places beyond which it's unsafe to go. And that's a very difficult number to justify and demonstrate and explain why and how that is. But I'm telling you that it's just their information is inaccurate and incomplete. That's all. And our goal has to be to get this plan done, to get every living sentient human being to have accurate, truthful, whole, complete, timely, and relevant information to them where they are, when they are, and with who they are that's relevant to them right now. Not 2 minutes ago, not 2 minutes from now, but what's important to them right now. Now, because I started earlier on by saying that the mind is run by questions, we have to start asking ourselves and each other and popularizing a new set of questions compared to the ones we've been living inside of for as long as we've existed as a species. And I've been working on that. So my plan, said as simply as I can, is to ask myself and all others that will listen a new set of questions. And I say these questions can be embedded into collective conversations, embedded into collective communications by phone and web and world, very easily. And I call this system suggestology. And suggestology is, simply said, the art and science of asking questions, preferably more and more optimal, well thought out and wise questions, but asking questions and then making suggestions inside of questions. And the reason is because questions hook the mind. The moment the mind hears a question, whether it was internally generated or externally generated, it goes into seek, hide and seek mode. It looks to find the solution to that question, the answer to that problem. Does that make any sense to you?
Yes.
So today, when I got eventually from Tara the number, your number is a dial-in number that's a USA number. And I have, you know, a Skype account that has a global dial-in, free of charge, kind of unlimited monthly calling plan. So I chose to Skype in today when I could have just dialed in from one of my cell phones or gone in through with Heather, you know, on the same line together. Heather and I have been working together, as she said, for nearly 6 years. And when I met Heather, she was running the project of the Venus Project, and she was the one that just happened to be answering the emails that I was sending to Jacques and Roxanne with the intention of sponsoring or supporting the sponsoring and the capitalization of funding of their movie and their movement. I felt they gained enough momentum that they now needed capital to get to the next level. Just like a space shuttle, it needs specialized fuel, and it costs a lot of money to get that fuel. And you then can go, if you know what you're doing and you have a team big enough and systems clean enough and clear enough and accurate enough, you can actually get a human body or more than one from the Earth's surface out into space, move around a little and come back, or get as far as the moon, or in the case of the project I'm working on at the moment, it's called Mars-1.com, Mars and a little minus sign, O-N-E.com. Mars One is a system for getting 100,000 people or more to live on Mars by 2032. It was announced in 2020, and they said within 20 years, we'll have 100,000 people or more living permanently on Mars. Now, that's quite a bold declaration. I know, I think it was JF Kennedy said, we'll get to the moon in 10 years or less. This billionaire from India said, we'll get to Mars in 20 years or less. But not just get there, we'll actually colonize Mars. Now, when they put that idea together, that project today, that question together, how are we going to do that? Who's going to want to do that with us? And who out of 7.5 to 10 billion people is going to actually journey with us? They weren't expecting the kind of responses they had. The first day they put their web system up and they popularized it with this speech the man gave, they had 4.3 million people apply to go and live on Mars. That was a larger response than they were anticipating.
Wow.
Wow is right. I mean, it was
shocking. I think I was one of them.
Well, there you go. There you go. Tara wants to live on Mars. That explains everything. I wonder, does Angie Bowie want to live on Mars, or does she want to live here? I think he had a song, David had a song about Major Tom to Ground Control. Do you remember that song?
Yeah.
I certainly do.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite songs he ever did when he was talking about Major Tom to Ground Control. So I see an era that we're in right now where things are shifting very quickly because, and this is huge what I'm about to say to you, so I want you to really just be present with what I'm actually saying and notice if you try to make it mean anything or significant and add something to it. Environment is stronger than willpower. So if you, and Buckminster Fuller taught me, don't argue with people, just rearrange the environment because environment is stronger than willpower. So if you're ice and I change the temperature or the pressure or both, you're going to turn from a solid, water solid ice to a liquid to gas, steam. And if I superheat you, you'll explode out and leave a vacuum behind. If I supercool you, you'll shrink down and disappear at absolute zero. But most people only know of one, two, or three of the solid, liquid, and gas. They don't know about superheat and supercool just because they haven't been exposed to that information or experienced that outcome. But it's true even if they don't know it yet. Clear?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the physical environment. So you can understand, I don't need to touch you. I just need, if you're ice, so I just change the temperature, the pressure, or both, you are going to alter your state without me having to directly interact with you. You're going to be influenced and impacted by the environment you're inside of because your system is inside of this bigger system of temperature and pressure, and you're going to be influenced and impacted by that, whether you like it or not. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Now, here's where it gets very interesting. It turns out that context is king. Context creates content in a non-physical sense. So if I ask you a question about, you know, do you want to go to Mars, Rick?
And you want me to answer that? Mars isn't the kind of place. Mars isn't the kind of place to raise your kids. No, I don't. Well, I think I would feel more planted and grounded here.
Clear. So you have a preference based on your current knowledge base and information experience base to stay on the biosphere you're familiar with, home, planet Earth, spaceship Earth, Mother Earth, as we call her, because it's safe, secure, and familiar, and it doesn't occur to you like Mars is a great place to raise your kids. That said, you don't have much information about Mars and what's on it and how one might inhabit it and whether there's water or not and how we would build there and who would be going and whether they'd be the smartest people from the Earth. And so you're making your decision, it might occur for you like a choice, but it's really a decision, based on at best incomplete information, at worst inaccurate information. Clear?
Right. I am.
And it's not wrong to say that I don't want to...
It's inaccurate information because there is no information available. All this, you know, inviting you on the show and talking about the Venus Project, all this stuff is not anything that is commonly spoken about, is it?
Well, yeah, yes and no. Let me explain. We live in a time when, as you know, the internet has become quite popular. And while it is policed extremely excessive in certain countries like China and Russia, it is still a relatively open system. I'm not saying it's an open system because it's not. But it's a relatively rapid and open system for sharing energy, information, experience, text, audio, video, and soon holographics and 3D printing and stuff like that, which we could get into. But the point is, it's a system which we call the global brain or the global mind. And because it takes less time to get your idea out there, and if you know what you're doing, you can make it viral by asking questions and making suggestions inside of questions that cause it to spread extremely radically and rapidly around the whole planet, in all languages, in all locations, all countries, all cultures, all cities, all currencies, and all people on the planet could, excuse me, all people on the planet could be influenced by this conversation. The conversation we're having right now, actually, with it's at least a part of the bigger conversation, if you can hear what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a time when we had a collective conversation, the planet is flat, and while we lived inside of that context that the planet is flat, we had boundaries, like areas where we thought we couldn't go beyond, and if we did, we'd get hurt or killed, and it was dangerous, and there'd be dragons or something over there. And eventually, over time, an individual said, well, maybe it ain't flat, and they got killed, and they got into trouble, and they were not popular. In fact, they were the opposite of popularized. They were depopularized. But hundreds of years later, we acknowledged them for having been accurate and truthful, whole and complete. Just we had killed them off because they were saying something that wasn't yet palatable to the masses at the time because everybody knew the world was flat and they were just a heretic. Clear?
Yep.
Today, when I say, let's go to Mars, you go, yeah, right. You know, you think, well, why would I want to do that? Never mind how would I do that, but why would I want to go from a planet that seems relatively habitable to a planet that seems completely inhabitable? Right? Why would I even want to consider thinking about that, much less speaking and acting on and taking the time to find out why to and how to do that and then actually doing it and taking all the money, the time, the energy, the resources, the people, the projects and all the systems necessary to accomplish getting there and taking all the things we'd need to take with us on that camping trip, because it's like a camping trip, right? Have you been camping? Have you taken your kids camping?
Oh, yeah.
Right. So you know what it's like when you go on a camping trip. You need to gather a load of stuff. to be prepared for the environment you're going into. And obviously it's different if it's for the polar ice caps than if you're going to some nice place in Algonquin Park in Canada, right?
Right.
You'll take different stuff with you. Your tent might have a fly sheet and might have, you know, some heated system for it, you know, if it's a very cold environment. Or you might take different clothing and different stoves and different kind of equipment for it. So the trip is a context of going to Mars. It's very different than going camping from one point of view. But from another point of view, it's the same thing. You're going to a new environment that you've been in before, and you need to know as much as you can about the environment before you get there and plan as far and deep, as wide and as clearly and cleanly as you can for anything and everything that could possibly happen, like a bear coming to eat your food in the middle of the night. Yeah?
Right.
And you prepared for camping trips because you love your kids. You don't want them to get eaten by a bear, do you?
Not really.
But you know that in certain parts of the world, when you're out camping and your food is smellable or distinguishable or discernible by a bear and they're hungry, they come by your tent, and if you happen to make the wrong noise or move in the wrong direction, it could end up in tears or worse, right?
That's right.
So you risked going camping with the most valuable asset you probably have, which is your own progeny, your children, your kids.
Mm-hmm.
And you've taken those kids that it took you quite a while to figure out how to create and how to sustain and how to, you know, birth and how to educate. I'm guessing you're helping them learn things, and I'm guessing you're supporting them in various ways until they can support themselves. How old are your kids, Rick?
I have a son who's 24.
Okay, so he's relatively potentially self-sufficient. Has he got all his fingers and arms and legs and head, nothing missing?
Yep.
He
sure does.
In consciousness?
Yep.
And what's he do for a living, if anything?
He is an apprentice funeral director and mortician.
So he has probably, unless we become a physically immortal species, he's got a career that's going to keep having customers.
That's right.
Very clear. Very clear. So, and what made him pick that, do you think, or do you know?
Well, I know for a fact. I had always encouraged him to find a career versus a job. And he was a senior in high school, and he came up with this idea all on his own, basically saying what you just said, Dr. King, which is, you know, I can do this anywhere. There's always going to be a need for this. And he went for it, and he's been in his field now 5 years. And like I said, he's only 24. And he's very self-sufficient, independent, extremely intelligent, and very successful for a young man his age.
Very cool. Now, is his mother still around? Is she still alive?
No, and that was one reason that I think he got into this, is that he suffered a few losses while he was in high school, one being his biological mother. And he attended funerals and watched everybody and saw how the people running the funerals were actually helping people. And he decided, one of the things he said to me was, Dad, I don't want to be a therapist. As an aside, I was a therapist for over 25 years, mental health. And he says, I want to help people. I want to be part of the community. I want to do something spiritual. And I was just very amazed that he had been thinking in that direction. And he sent out one resume, and the next thing I know, he was hired. And he now lives in Boston, has been there 5 years, and that's what he does.
And does he have a wife or children?
No, he has a girlfriend. No,
but he knows
he's not ready. What's that?
He knows how to create children. He just hasn't chosen to do that yet.
Right.
Very good. Yep. Very good. So, and Rick, what made you, just, I'm asking questions, as you can see, and I'm going to make some suggestions inside of questions in a moment. So you're getting
sure.
The experience of not the conversation about suggestology, which is a very potent skill set. I wish we taught this and other things at school, because it would help our species become maximally creative. So I'm going to say something to you, and then I want you to respond or react, or just give me your feedback and input.
But okay.
I was lucky enough to study with a man called Dr. Richard Buckminster Fuller, and I was also lucky enough to study with a man called John David Garcia. Have you ever heard of that name before?
No, I don't think I have.
Well, all of his writings and teachings are available in English and Spanish free of charge.
Oh, okay. I do know who he is. Sorry.
SEE.org. C.org. And I had the privilege of meeting him on my phone on the 1st of April, 1998, and then he passed away just after the Twin Towers came down in November the 23rd of 2001. And the reason I'm bringing him up is he had this saying, one of his very advanced sayings. He was the guy who invented pattern recognition, by the way, which is used by many governments and banks now to sort of recognize the way you behave in the bank or the way you behave in the car park before you get in the bank, or the way you behave in an airport, or whether you pay your parking tickets or not. There's all sorts of little behavioral things that this pattern recognition can be applied to, but it can also be applied to the cosmos and how it works, and other creatures, great and small, and how they work, and how the biosphere itself works, and how Mars works. But anyway, he had this phrase, and it made total sense to me, but you tell me if it makes any sense to you. He said that we have been, as a species, politically, socially, economically, religiously, and culturally, punishing and rewarding the creativity out of our fellow human beings because, and he said this, when somebody's creative, their behavior is unpredictable and uncontrollable, so we punish that. When somebody is conformist, their behavior is predictable and controllable, so we reward that because it makes us feel safe, secure, and familiar. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it resonates with me too.
Yep.
It's quite depressing when you think about it, because it's what we do, but it isn't necessarily the smartest thing we do.
No.
We do lots of things that are very smart, you know, like poop where we eat. That's not smart, right?
Right.
But we do that in many ways, you know, in the ways that we damage the water in the rivers and the lakes and the oceans, and then we wonder why our water's toxic, and we wonder why our food becomes toxic, and we wonder why our environment becomes toxic. Well, because we're not taking care of things. We're letting things just ride. We're not conscious of the consequence of our conversations and actions yet. And just like a baby, if I gave it matches, it could burn itself or burn the house down or hurt somebody else. The same is true of our species. If we're not yet mature enough spiritually to be running the biosphere properly, and we're the most manipulative creature on the earth, we're the one with the opposable thumb that is more changed on the ground, under the ground, on the sea, under the sea, in the sky, and in space than any other creature. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm.
That's in the physical. In the metaphysical, it turns out we have a 60 cycles per second resonating frequency of our little larynx, you know, the thing in our throat that lets us make sound and voice and language. And that 60 cycles per second gives us the most complex language structure of any creature on the earth, even more complex than whales and dolphins. Hmm. And because of complexity, we're not just manipulative in the physical with the supposable thumb and machines that replicate that, but we're also very manipulative, the most manipulative creature on the earth, non-physically, metaphysically, as they call it. Does that resonate with you?
Yes.
Now, I'm not saying being manipulative is a good or a bad thing, but it gives you power and authority, and if you don't use it wisely, you can harm, not heal. You can destroy, not create. You can be destructive on balance rather than creative on balance. And I think we need to focus on maximizing our individual and collective creativity, which is what I learned from John David Garcia, basically. I could get into a lot more depth, but that's the bottom line of what he said. You've got to maximize your own and other people's creativity to the best of your ability.
So, Dr. Jack, now, you think that the population is not being creative, is not being allowed to be creative enough the way the system is run at the moment?
I didn't say that. I just said that the way we have been communicating and acting has us punish and reward creativity out of our species and conformity into it. And I intend in the next 90 days to shift that with your help, if you choose to help. And here's why. First of all, no telling what a human being will do if you don't tell them what to do. There's no telling what they'll do. There's no telling what they'll do. You can guess, but you won't know what they're actually going to do until they've done it. They might sleep all day. They might go on a holiday. You know, they might, you know, get into fight. You don't know what they'll do unless you give them the space to do it. But if you ask the kind of questions I'm going to invite you to ask yourselves and each other and others, you start to discover that there's this huge untapped resource inside of every sentient being, not just human being. And this untapped resource is the key to making what our friend Jack Fresco from the Venus Project visualized. He saw a possibility, just like, you know, a little man called Henry Ford saw a car and roads. So we're 100 years out or more from when he saw that, and now you can see the consequence of his vision. It popularized, and it replicated, and now there's roads and cars all over the place. But back then, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, 1908, when he started producing his first car, you know, that wasn't probable. That was almost certain not to happen. You wouldn't have predicted 2016 the way 2016 is, with cars that drive themselves from A to B and, you know, some governments allowing that to happen already. You understand? That wasn't a predictable, controllable future for Henry Ford back then. He just wanted to build something that no one had built before to sort of manually make a machine that created the equivalent of the horse and buggy. They even called it horsepower in terms of the amount of power the engine had, right?
Right.
Because that's what they could relate to was a horse. The horse could take you from A to B on its back or on a carriage behind it, right? Or behind some horse. And so we've moved a long way in the transportation context from there. But what will transportation be like a year or 10 years or 100 years from now? Who knows, right?
Great.
Great question, though, right?
Well, it is.
It makes you think. I mean, we've come this far already. What could the next 100 years bring? The second thing is in education. You know, education.
Are you there?
Yes, can you hear me? Can you still hear me?
Hello?
Can you still hear me?
Yep. Jack, I can hear you.
Okay.
I can hear you. Are you
all right? Okay, good. Hello. Maybe Rick got muted out or something. Can you hear me okay, Rick?
I can, yep.
Okay, just
thank
checking
you.
You didn't not like what I was saying and just locked me out.
Yeah.
I'm not listening to that. I'm going to put my thumbs in my ears. So I'm talking now about the future of education. And education in the past has been sort of entrainment and entrapment, in the sense that if you look at the history of education, there's a great book on this subject if you want to really study it. John Taylor Gatto, who was a school teacher in New York District, for decades. And then one day he won Teacher of the Year Award, and they actually asked him stupidly to speak. And he spoke to the fourth purpose of education, and the first three purposes were basically to make human beings act like machines in a predictable and a controllable way. And he was very blatant about this, very, very blatant. His name again is John Taylor Gatto. You'll find that when he made this speech, they wanted to take his award away from him because he basically said that he thought that education in the way it was currently conducted was destructive, not creative. And actually limited a human being's development rather than expanding it. And he was very clear and specific and detailed about why and how he felt that. And because he was Teacher of the Year, they couldn't exactly ignore the fact that it was him saying this. You know, so and he's made a movie which we're going to popularize, which he calls, and you'll love this title, he calls it Weapons of Mass Instruction. Weapons of Mass Instruction. Brilliant title from my point of view, because, you know, we have a similar phrase that is slightly different at the end, but the phrase implies you know, that there's this huge power outside of you that you have no way to predict and control, and you're at the effect of, and you're this tiny little insignificant human being in a huge planet in a giant solar system in an enormous cosmos, and you have no power whatsoever. Whereas the truth is, you have more power than you know. We all do. And the power is to choose consciously what we give our energy and our attention and our time to. And I'm inviting you to look at the future of education. I have developed with some partners some technologies, physical and non-physical technologies, that will help our species maximize their individual and collective creativity. And there's no telling how quickly we could bring the vision of John David Garcia and the vision of Jacques Fresco and the vision of Buckminster Fuller and Leonardo da Vinci, some of the other visionaries that have lived. There's no telling how quickly we could bring those visions into focus and then into form. So that's enough for right now. Why don't you ask some questions or tell me some feedback on what we've covered so far? Was that what you were looking for, or did I take you off on a tangent?
No, this is fabulous. In my opinion, I am enthralled with what you've been saying. It's very fascinating. And I think you've given us a lot of food for thought about approaching situations, new situations, with basically an open mind. I don't know, this has been fabulous.
Yeah, how would you say someone can start being a part of the solution that we need for the whole globe?
It's a great question,
Tara,
because first of all, you're assuming that people want to be part of the solution, not just part of the problem. You're assuming they don't want to numbify themselves with drugs and alcohol and power and money and sex and food. You know, you'll discover that most human beings are actually familiar with being numb and dumb. That's what they're familiar with. And
mm-hmm.
they prefer to stay numb and dumb. It's not very risky staying numb and dumb. Then every now and then they'll poke their little head up above the turret and somebody will see that they're actually not as numb and dumb as they might pretend to be. And they might get frightened depending on the reaction or response to them poking their head up above the boundary, if you know what I'm saying. So don't be concerned too much about how we're going to do this, but understand why first before we get into the how. Okay. So I run a daily conversation. It's called BeTheVortex.com, and it's a private by invitation only members site. But your members of viewers and listeners are certainly welcome. Readers and writers are welcome to come and participate. It's a conversation we have frequently every day with a group of people who are inquiring, exploring, and discovering in a guided and facilitated way. But we're inquiring, exploring, and discovering into what's optimally possible for humankind and how would we distinguish what's optimally possible from everything else for the whole of humankind, and then how would we make what's optimally possible probable, then certain, and then actual. That's what we're inquiring, exploring, and discovering into in a sort of guided, facilitated way. And I'm often, not always, the host of the conversation, the facilitator. But there are others who've been trained to manage the conversation when I'm not around. The goal has to be to manage this conversation with and inside of integrity to and through completion. Now, that's a big sentence, with and inside of integrity to and through completion. Most people don't know what integrity is, much less how to measure weight, much less how to restore it in themselves and others. Because they think it's gone and it's not recoverable, and it is. It's totally recoverable, no matter what you said or didn't say, did or didn't do. That's the past. You can't change the past, but you can change your relationship with the past. Whatever happened, happened. You can't change that, but you can change your behavior in the present and the future. And that's what I'm inviting everybody to start to consider doing. So what you focus on grows is the answer to your question. If you focus on the problems will grow. The project, you probably heard of it, Rick. Have you heard of the Hunger Project?
The what project?
Hunger Project.
Hunger Project. I'm not
you
sure
have
I have. Yeah.
That's now, right. So the Hunger Project was created to end hunger. Only problem was it was called the Hunger Project, and hunger increased, not reduced. Why? Because they were focused on hunger. Now, we have a project called EveryHumanFed.com, which is a project to focus on every human being being fed. What a radical concept. Okay. Now, what you focus on grows. That's an example of what I mean by that. Okay. So, for instance, Mother Teresa, who is quite well-known and renowned and popular, would never speak against war, but she would speak for peace. Because she knew that if she spoke against war, she was giving her energy, her time, her attention to war, and war would increase.
Are you saying that we need to focus our thoughts? Because whatever we think about comes about. Is that what you mean?
Well, yes, Anne. Let me go a little deeper than you. That's accurate, but it's not complete. So it's what we think and what we say and what we do. So let me give you the way that it is that most people don't know it is. So it starts with intention. Like your son saw his mother pass away. How did his mother pass? What happened?
She had an inoperable brain tumor that calcified, and she became increasingly psychotic and had seizures, and she eventually basically killed herself with medication because she just couldn't stand the way she was living.
And how long from when she passed away to the original time when he had a sense that that was happening to his own mother?
I think my son had an understanding that things weren't okay for a very long time in his childhood.
You get a sense how old he was when you imagine it first became consciously known to him?
I want to say probably around kindergarten, 6 years old, I bet.
So, yeah. And when old was he when she passed?
He was a sophomore in high school, I believe. So he would have been about 16, 17.
So about 10 years, so about a decade or so, he was aware that his mother was passing, and there was nothing he could really do about it, and it got progressively more challenging to be with.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Clear. Now, this is a recommendation and a suggestion, but it's not, you shouldn't do this. There's nothing wrong with him or you. I just think it would help him and you get a better and closer relationship than you already have. There's a group called LandmarkWorldwide.com, LandmarkWorldwide.com, who are promoting a new culture, a new kind of possibility thinking in conversations that they facilitate in 122 venues in 60 countries in 8 languages. It's a very conscious inquiry into what it is to be a human being. And I say it would help your son, particularly your son, based on what you just shared with me, come to a new understanding of himself and how he might choose to be in the world. I think it would empower him in his vocation and his relationships with you and with other people, including his girlfriend and potential children. But I just recommend you let him look at that and find out the facts, full facts about it, make an informed choice about it, and let us know what he chooses. If he chooses to do their introductory course, let me know so I can support him by phone or web if he wants support. But it's called LandmarkWorldwide.com. That's a course that I did in 92, the weekend before my father passed away. So in April 1992. But the reason I share it is because it's a resource that you probably didn't know that you didn't know that you didn't know exists in the world that is extremely potent, and it produces quantum results, like massive, unexpected breakthroughs in full self-expression, vitality, health, love and intimacy, and authenticity in relationship, in personal and professional relationships. So it's a very powerful environment inside of which to explore and inquire and discover what it is to be a human being, which we all have in common. We're all human beings being human. We're 2-year-olds in big bodies making stuff up and pretending we know where we're going and how we're getting there. But really, we're just making stuff up all day long. Now,
I have to vouch for that. I did the RIG, and everyone. I did the Landmark course really out of curiosity, really, last year, and certainly issues that had been a block in my life for years, that no one has ever been able to help me with, were able to just disintegrate. So it is it's obviously non-culty, non-religious, and actually on the landmark course, I heard that they did the landmark course in a prison in the States, and they had a 99% success rate, whereas prisoners normally recommit a crime to get back into prison because they've been reinstitutionalized, and they found those prisoners that had done the landmark course, 99% didn't recommit a crime to go back into prison because they had found a way to be empowered and to sort their life out. So it's an incredible, it's a really amazing course. Obviously, you know, it's not publicly available in the media, but I think millions of people globally have done it. And it is a success. Very powerful.
Tara, just so you know, there are now ads on YouTube and on Google for the forum, the introductory conversation and course. So you should just know that. But it's called landmarkworldwide.com. You can check all the videos and audios and text files out there. And obviously there's lots of rumor, gossip, and opinion. There's lots of rumor, gossip, and opinion on the web about it. But you should just stick with the facts and the experience of it and let yourself be with people who've actually been through the programs, because they have a different mindset, mood, and attitude than the people who haven't yet, who are still frightened or concerned that it might somehow damage them or something, right? But what I want to say to you, Rick, and why I wanted to share that is because that sort of work is called ontology, the art and science of being as distinct from doing and having. And in the East, they have three mysteries: air to the bird, water to the fish, humans to themselves. To the bird, there's no air, there's just flying. To the fish, there's no water, there's just swimming. And to the human being, there's no being, there's just doing and having. We should be called human doings and human havings, not human beings. Because at the end of the day of doing, we're covered in doo-doo, we take a shower or a bath, and then we go to sleep. And then the next day, we take ourselves in doo-doo one more time, right? And we wander doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome, which is the definition of insanity. But we do it because it's what we've been entrained and entrapped to perceive and believe is all there is. And I assure you, it is all there is. But that work prepares you for the stuff that I do, which is a little more deep and advanced. It's more spiritual in nature, perhaps. It's very useful in all areas of life. And I wrote a book that's going to be published publicly on the 1st of April. But before it's published, you can get it free of charge. You can listen to it and capture it from a website called TheBookThatMadeTheDifference.com. TheBookThatMadeTheDifference.com. So you want to write that down for yourself or the listeners and the readers and viewers of this. You just TheBookThatMadeTheDifference.com. TheBookThatMadeTheDifference.com. So TheBookThatMadeTheDifference.com is a website which leads you, if you're with us, to the event that made the difference and then the decade that made the difference, both .coms. So it goes from the book that made the difference.com to the event that made the difference.com to the decade that made the difference.com. These are three contexts. The first is something you can do on your own turf, on your own terms, without anybody else around. You can just listen to it on the web or listen to it on the phone, or listen to it, you know, from somebody else's pre-recorded replay, or you can capture, we've actually printed it already in various formats. So you can actually read the book or listen to the book like an audio or a written book. But the second, the event, we're going to have one for 111 people between now and the end of the month. It'll be just before the weekend of the 29th, 30th, and 31st of January. So we're going to have an event in England, just south of London, and it's for 111 people. And the goal of the event is to have you have the experience of the material in the book, not the conversation about it, but the experience of it in a community of people who are grappling with it and inquiring into it together, rather than being on your own trying to figure it out, working as little groups and teams. And very exciting opportunity. It's only £111, 11 pence for the whole day, so it's not a lot of money from the one point of view. I mean, I suppose it is for some people, but that's the cost per person per day as a member. it's double that as a mentor, triple that as a master, and then it's nine times that fee for a VIP who wants to learn to earn using this technology, like make money from it rather than just make sense. But the point
so,
is...
So, Dr. Jack, we've got actually 5 minutes left to the end of the show, and I just want to quickly get a few things in. Your book that's called I Am the Future, Start It Now, is available on the book that made the difference.com. And I just want to read something at the back of the book. It says, our goal is to consciously create the circumstances where every living human on earth is expressing and experiencing the quality of life and lifestyle of billions of billionaires, everyone included, no one left out. Now, that's quite a bold statement, and I just want to ask you, Dr. Jack, what inspires you, a one-minute version if that's possible, what inspires you to commit your whole life to this? What is it? We're fascinated.
Well, it is very easy for me to answer in a minute or less. I had an incident in 1985 where I was basically clinically pronounced dead. And in that experience, I was in a hospital. I had some situations where it was clear to the people around me that I was not long for this earth plane. And for whatever reason, the cosmos and the nature of nature created me recovering from that. And when I recovered, I promised myself that if I was brought through this incident and able to still be in the physical body and listen and speak with people, I would commit the rest of my embodiment, my lifetime, to loving, serving, and supporting other people as best I could and not being concerned about what was in it for me at all. Now, that sounds very altruistic and perhaps a little unrealistic and ungrounded and a little bit of a hippy-dippy kind of way of being, but it worked for me, and I've had the privilege, and if you knew more about me, and some of you do, you know, I've had the privilege of working with some of the most creative and intelligent people on the planet and having enormous impact and influence on those people's thinking and speaking and action.
Can you share some of those people with our audience, or is it private?
I can. I mean, I've worked with people like Steve Jobs. I've worked once a week for an hour. I would work with him from the 1st of April, 79, till the day he passed away. I also have worked with other people who are, you know, well-known. Jim Rohn, I work with the same way, an hour a week, every week by phone, and then we meet a lot and travel a lot together. But look, they're just human beings like you and I. They're two-year-olds in big bodies who are either still alive or have passed away. And they just wanted to be creative and make a difference. They wanted people to listen when they spoke. And when they spoke, they wanted to have something wise and sensible to say that might help the other person with their life or their business or their relationships or their communication. Now, the biggest thing I can tell you is that the way the cosmos is actually designed is there's intent, and around your strongest intentions gather thought. Around your strongest thoughts gather feelings. Around your strongest feelings gather words. Around your strongest words, gather actions, and around your strongest actions, gather results. And around your strongest results, gather communities. You want to build communities of consciousness and creativity.
Fantastic. So you have a weekly telephone conversation where the whole, you know, anyone can just ring in and get involved in the discussion. Can you give us 1 minute? Can you give us a one-minute information about that, how we get hold of you?
Absolutely. So, first of all, you can call me directly, although I want you to be intelligent about that, on +44 7738 762044. My book is the first book that has my direct phone number published on the front and back inside and outside cover. So you can call me directly. If I'm available, I will pick up. If I'm not, I'll either text you back or call you back or have somebody do that to follow up and follow through with you. So that's how you reach me directly. But by group, we do a group conference call every day, and once a week we do an introduction for people who've never been with us. That's on a Wednesday. Starts at 11:11 a.m. on a Wednesday. We call it Wisdom on Wednesday. That's part of wisdomworldwide.com. But the access portal is called BeTheVortex.com. BeTheVortex.com. And if you want to get to the phone conference call and be live and interactive, able to answer questions and make suggestions, live and interactive. That's bethevortex.com/phone. And just know that we also record these so you can listen to the replays on our system. And my direct blog is Dr. spelled out doctorjackking.blog.com. Doctorjackking.blog.com. And that'll give you audiovisually a way of tapping into my world and reaching me directly or indirectly through the conversations we have, phone, web, and world, and live events coming up. Does that answer your question, Tara?
That's wonderful, and we are out of time, and we'll make sure we'll put your contact details on this version of this blog talk radio, which is available to listen to at any time after this live session. So thank you, Dr. Jack. Thank you, Heather. You're both, I admire you both a lot for your passion, for caring about the whole of humanity as opposed to just a section of it. And we hope you are very successful and that we will join you in the mission of saving the planet. And I'll see you on Mars for a pint, Dr. Jack.
I think we'll see you then, Tara, but I got the point.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. It was fabulous.
It's been a pleasure.
And if you share the contact information with me for the show, I'll help popularize it and distribute it to a few million people that are on our lists, okay?
Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you for your time. Thank you,
and
Rick.
And Tara, thank you. Thank you for being here.
No, cheers. It's been a great show, and you all guys just talked. We didn't play any of your songs, Heather and Jack, because we haven't had time to upload them. But we will do that one another time.
Let's do another one with the music, okay?
Exactly. So, and in the background, Angie and the press were leaving the building. So thanks for keeping the show together, everyone. And see you next time. So cheers.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah. Thanks, Rick. Bye.
Bye-bye.